Hello, I'm Mark, a.k.a. Below the Belt, from the Neverwinter Nights 1 server, Renthior, and you're listening to the only Neverwinter Nights podcast.
This is so exciting! Wow! Where to begin?
It's the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The only podcast for the Neverwinter Nights game series, bringing you news, interviews, reviews, and more for the community by the community. You can find us online at neverwinternightspodcast.com. And now, on to the show.
Hey, I'm Trey, a.k.a. AsherCon Zelo. And we're back. Hold on a second. There's somebody at the door.
Hey, I heard you got a podcast going on in here.
Hey, it's Jay. Come on in, man.
This is the Dragon Age podcast, right?
Dragon Age?
Oh, wait. Maybe I got this confused.
That's next door.
Oh, okay. Well, good. So this must be the Neverwinter Nights podcast.
Yes, exactly. This is the 128th episode of the only Neverwinter Nights communities podcast.
That's the podcast all about Neverwinter Nights series role-playing games. Right?
Yes, sir. And now it will soon include the new Neverwinter coming from Cryptic Studios in 2011. Have you heard about that?
I've heard about it, but I've heard it's a little cryptic.
Nice.
Nice, yes. It is a little cryptic, but it has brought back a lot of excitement in the community, especially around, you know, anytime a new release of a game comes out that we're all in love with, it always brings back a little bit.
Yeah, there's lots of posts out there on the forums and community pages and Facebook. Everybody's biting at the chumps. So, as you know, or may not have known.
I know.
We have been on hiatus for a while, but we're back.
Yeah, we're going to have a new website. And one thing of note is that on the new site, we won't have a forums. We're going to be using our Facebook page for that. So if you have any comments or questions or good ideas for us, you can post it over on Facebook.
Yeah, exactly. Or you can do a search out there for Neverwinter Nights Podcast on the Facebook pages, and we should pop up.
I love popping up. It's one of my favorite things to do.
With all the other Neverwinter Night pages. And moving right along. Hey, we're also introducing some new format to the show. Our shows are going to include, you know, the interviews as always, right?
Right.
But we'll be adding some new segments to the shows. To the shows. Some of them will be comedy. Some will be news related.
Just trying to hear us do straight face is comedy, I think, sometimes. But anyway.
Hearing us try to pronounce these words.
Yeah, you're kidding.
Hey, and also we're going to focus some segments on NWN2 as well as NWN1. And then probably, you know, as Neverwinter comes out, we'll be doing that too. So hopefully we'll have some good content for you guys.
So coming up in this episode, after some news, we'll have one of those new segments on Neverwinter Nights 2 from the guys over at Realms at Trinity.
Yes, so be sure you listen to that. And after that, we'll have an interview with Mark, a.k.a. Below the Belt, about his new NWN1 Persistent World, Arinthior.
Yeah, that was a great interview.
Arinthior.
So now to the news. Since we've been on hiatus, there's quite a bit to get caught up on.
Yeah, exactly. So
the biggest news, as you mentioned earlier, would be that the third game of the Neverwinter Legacy is in development over at Cryptic Studios. For 2011, simply called Neverwinter. It's touted to be an OMG.
A what?
An OMG, not to be confused with oh my gosh in texting. It is an online multiplayer game. So supposedly, you'll be able to play a game with up to 5 of your friends online in a party mode. And if you go into an area, you will have your own instance of that area that you're playing in. So it's kind of like the way some of the other online games are doing.
Only 5?
Hey, I didn't make the rules. I also got an email just recently that I wanted to share with everyone from Atari talking about the book coming out that seems to be partially connected with Neverwinter. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, the R.A. Salvatore book?
Yeah, it's R.A. Salvatore. Another name we're going to butcher. Gauntlegrim. So if you're looking forward to the new Neverwinter Nights PC game by Cryptic Studios, but you just can't wait. They have an early quest for you. Get a sneak peek at the highly anticipated storyline with Gauntlegrim, Neverwinter 1. It's a New York Times bestseller author, R.A. Salvatore, so you know it's going to be good. I love his book. So it's supposed to give you a kind of a forthcoming look at what the world is going to be like for Neverwinter.
Awesome. So y'all check that out.
And it says here it looks like it should be available at bookstores everywhere. I was going to check and see if the Kindle version was available before I could, so I could download
it. Yeah, there you go.
So you said something about written interviews, right? So
yeah.
When are we getting our interview?
Well, I'm glad you asked. So we are in contact with PR over at Cryptic, and hopefully we'll have one soon. So please stay tuned for that.
And you know we will.
Coming up in a...
So the folks over at Never Ending Nights recently released episode 59 of their Neverwinter Nights Machinima. So you want to check that out? I thought they were done.
Well, they're getting near the end. I was reading on Thomas's Facebook page that these last few episodes are taking longer to put out because he knows that the end is coming.
The end is nigh.
Yes.
So it's final, the final episodes.
And hopefully also he mentioned on his Facebook page that he might... he's going to be doing some stuff for us, so be sure to look out for that. It's going to
be some of the new segments we were talking about. Exactly. Hint, hint, wink, wink, hint, nudge, hint. Nudge, say no more.
It's going to be some fun stuff, I hope.
Cool, exciting. Can't wait to hear that.
Yeah, so have you heard of the game retail site called GOG.com?
GOG.com?
That's it.
No, I have not. Well, tell me about it, please.
Well, some of you probably know about the website, but they've been releasing for download many of the D&D classics for sale lately, where you can download them electronically.
So you mean like Baldur's Gate and Icewind Dale 2, Planescape Torment, and Temple of Elemental Evil, and other stuff like that?
Exactly. And guess what they just recently released?
What?
NWN1 Diamond Edition.
Oh, sweet. You know, actually, was at Best Buy the other day. They have one copy of Neverwinter Nights Diamond for sale. Still $20, but I understand this is like...
Oh, still $20 there?
Yeah.
Wow.
So what's it online?
$9.99. Wow. $10.
That's like $10 less.
So yeah, that's great news for the community because, you know, that's still a great game to get for your collection. So.
And as you'll find out in an up-and-coming interview that we're having in this episode, there are new things happening in Neverwinter Nights 1 space, so exactly. Picking up a new copy of that is never a bad idea.
Exactly. Hey, and also over at Realms of Trinity, I guess while we were out, they released chapters 3 and 4.
Well, we're way behind.
Upgrades to their NWN2 world, so go check that out over at realmsoftrinity.com.
Also, while we were sleeping, the Academy of Modding Excellence announced the finalists for the Neverwinter Nights 1 2009 Dragon Awards. We will have an upcoming interview where Tybe the Great and Tony, a.k.a. Anadarian, will be talking about the finalists.
Anadarian?
Andarian? I don't know. He always has to correct me. So, word butcher score plus one.
Hey, and also, last week when I was putting the notes together for the news, I was going to try to get an update on the CEP, the Community Expansion Pack, because I thought maybe they had released 2.3 while we were out.
I haven't seen.
However, I couldn't get on their forums. It's their site, and it seems to be down. So if anybody knows what's going on over there, anybody at CEP or otherwise, let us know.
Yeah. I can't imagine those guys, unless they're having hosting problems like I am on some of my sites.
Hopefully that's what it is.
Yeah.
But anyway.
So as we were saying, if you know anything about that, give us a shout. Also, another thing, it's like we're playing catch-up like crazy, right? So while we were
Want some fries with that ketchup?
Yeah, no kidding. Neverwinter Connections. You probably guys have all heard about this. NWCon 6 was hosted over there, the 6th annual online convention for players of Neverwinter Nights and Neverwinter Nights 2. We need to find out what's going on over there. We have heard some rumors of a revamped or upgraded website, but I don't know if they've gotten to that yet.
Yeah, they held that back in September, actually on my birthday.
Our
birthday. Yeah, for those of you who didn't know, Jay and I were born on the same day.
Well, same day of the month.
Because yeah, we're like brothers from another mother.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. Jay, I think that's all the news we have time for now. So why don't we take a break and hear from the guys over at Realms of Trinity, and then we'll get on to an interview with Mark over at Erinthior.
Sounds great.
Let's do it.
Well, I want to start, first of all, thank the Neverwinter Nights podcast team for inviting us from Realms of Trinity on to speak of everything Neverwinter Nights 2. This is the first of a new line of segments that the Neverwinter Nights podcast will be featuring during each of their podcasts to discuss any type of topic, development, gameplay, and persistent world development and module development for Neverwinter Nights 2. Tonight, we have senior members of our staff and DM staff to talk about our new rollout here at Realms of Trinity for the Underdark, and to talk about the ROT2 campaign in general. And at the end, we're going to talk a little bit about some just general NWN2 topics, different aspects of multiplayer gameplay in the current state. Over the last several months, we've been here developing the next rollout for Realms of Trinity for the ROT2 campaign, the Underdark. It's actually called the Deepening Dark. It revolves around strictly the Underdark and several major regions, starting with Chednasod and Aurelion. We also have several other areas under the Underdark that we're going to be going through to fill in and complete the immersion factor like we have on our previous development efforts and the things that we've brought to life, like the Nine Hells. Some of the big things to look for in a new release is we've come up with a whole new Sky Dome model and a whole another set of environmental placeables and settings to really recreate the Underdark like it hasn't been done before. We want to make sure that we continue the line of our development. We're raising the bar constantly and providing electronic versions of the paper D&D experience the best we can in the Neverwinter Nights 2 game engine. We keep constantly adding new effects, new scripting, new environmental, different things that will allow us to give the best representation of the Underdark. As far as the story is concerned, this Chapter 4, The Deepening Dark, continues directly after Chapter 3. And when you have to go into the Underdark to find a mythical item that will prevent a major calamity taking place on Faerun. It will not be an easy task. It will be a very challenging grind through the Underdark. It's not going to be friendly, not going to be easy. It is going to be dark, creepy, very expansive, and you're going to feel like that you don't really know where things end and begin because it's so vast, and it's really a harsh environment. Not harsh in the way of the Nine Hells was, because Nine Hells was a whole different experience than the Underdark is. We have incorporated a lot of the lore from the D&D manuals, and not only that, stuff from Ari Salvatore's work on the Underdark. But the twist on everything is that we've pushed the story ahead 234 years at this point of the game. And so there's going to be some things that don't quite line up in the manuals because we're 200-odd years past that. So there will be regions that were once destroyed and left to bear, like Chednasod, for instance, where Chednasod was destroyed several hundred years before the Neverwinter Nights 2 original campaign took place. It has been rebuilt, and the new inhabitants are non-friendly. And you're going to find that what you knew from the lore in the history book, so to speak, is not going to match up exactly with where things are now. So, you know, you may know things about the Underdark, but things that you're going to find, it's much more advanced now, the civilization, and there's a lot more to it than it was even 200 years prior to that. Elves have the drow have a long lifespan, and they're very relentless, and their urge to dominate and to take over other areas and regions really never was contained even over 200 years. So as far as the development is concerned, that's the way the actual Underdark looks. And if you'd like to know more or see more about it, please visit our website at www.realmsoftrinity.com. And click on our banner ad for the Chapter 4, and we have a lot of nice pictures there. We have a new custom loading screen, and hopefully you get to take a chance to check it out. We also have four preview areas in the game. You can use your return stone to get right to the beginning of the Underdark boards to be able just to walk through and see exactly what we're working on. We only will have four preview zones out there, but the total entire work will span about 30 areas, with about over half of them being right in the middle of the Underdark. So it's going to be a lot of fun. We have a lot of their development that we're going to get into now. Ross and Kama have been doing a lot of side development. Ross is working on a full side quest that he's going to talk about now, and then after that, Kama is going to jump in with some of the 3D modeling work that he's up to.
Yeah, right now I've been working on the Great Dale, mainly focusing on the Forest of Thayer, where the Circle of Leth are stationed. They were driven out hundreds and hundreds of years ago to Yeshelmar, which is an area where they created a fortress of sorts to protect the forest area, because that's kind of like their main goal, is just to protect the forest. They were driven out by demons and whatnot from the Rollinswood, Dunwood area, and that kind of deal. My area is going to be about 18 to 20 areas. I haven't quite decided on a fixed number. But it's going to be about 18 to 20 areas, a couple of side quests, spanning Yeshelmar, Beezantil, which is, right on the Great Road, and also dealing with the Muckle Stones and Malberg's Oak. Malberg's Oak is, an old tree that was created by an old druid hundreds and hundreds of years ago per lore, and it was turned into a druidic school. But now that we're 200 some odd years into the past that, it has been overrun, and now it's going to be tied into a side quest to be used to clear out and that kind of deal. That's basically about it.
Yeah, this is Kama. I've been working on a lot of the 3D models, new placeables, stuff like that, as needed by the builders for whatever they need to have done. I've been steadily rolling out content that has been released only to Realms of Trinity now for a little over a year. So if you want to check out my stuff, well, you got to come play.
That's right. Kama and Zeus form a team called Z&K Studios. They do a lot of 3D modeling work, as well as special visual effects and placeable design and walk mesh fixings. There's a lot of placeables in the game toolset itself that need a lot of work, because when they were created, their walk meshes and the way they stitch when we bake the zones leaves a lot to be desired. And
yeah,
without
they do suck.
And without Kama's help, there's a lot of areas that we would not be able to do without their expertise in redesigning and reducing polygon count, which also helps the performance of the players of our server, because not everybody has $10 billion video cards and things like that. So when we do new placeables, Kama goes through great pains to make sure that the poly count on the models are as least as they possibly can within reason. So there's a lot of work we do on that area as well. And as far
a lot
as
of liking it, too.
Yeah.
A lot of Vicodin.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of, yeah. And just to talk about, and last but not least, as far as ROT is concerned, you know, we've brought a lot of new DMs, a lot of new faces on the server in the past, I'd say several months. We have a lot of great new DMs, including in this podcast segment is Jason Wuzmaster and Guru X86. Callan had, and they've been doing a great job for the players and for us here at the staff of ROT to keep everybody interested and, you know, keeping things going with their side events and things of that nature. So we want to give a round of thanks to everybody who's continually, you know, standing behind us and, you know, making us one of the most successful NWN2 servers in existence. It's really appreciated, and the players really appreciate it. So, you know, it's one of the great things here at Realms of Trinity that we, you know, we're blessed from top to bottom. So just want to, you know, one more call out for that.
Oh, thanks, Brian.
You're welcome. And, you know, let's, you know, as far as like, you know, we're also here not to talk about ROT, but just NWN2 in general. Any thoughts from any of you guys about NWN2 as far as its future and what you'd like to see come up in the future, and, you know, things that, you know, would be great ideas that we could develop or maybe even contribute to the community?
I don't know how much further we're going to be able to push it. I mean, we already run one of the biggest servers out there. The content that we've added is phenomenal. We've got a pretty good solid player base. you know, with for as far as how far we can push it, will be according to what the game engine will continue to put up with as far as we keep pushing the boundaries.
Yeah, we've got a lot of on the server right now. I think we're up to 278 areas. With this rollout, we're going to go pretty close to 300. We might actually break 300. And as you know, as we point out to a lot of other people, even from other servers that talk to us, I mean, it's not just we don't have a lot of 2x2 areas. I mean, a lot of our areas are quite large, quite expansive, and they have a lot of detail, which it's a lot of overhead on the NWN2 server itself. You know, and being the fact that we're on the level of hardware, we actually have one of the most powerful servers that you could build within a reasonable budget right now. It's handling it very well. But, you know, if we add another 100 areas on, I don't know if I can say that or not. So, you know, we are definitely getting close to the maximum as far as what I'd be comfortable doing with our server. Because, you know, as of right now, you know, before we added the second campaign in with the first campaign, we were running around 48-second load time from cold start to the module being loaded. Now it's taking around maybe 2 minutes and 15 seconds. So all the additional content is starting to stack up. That's one other reason why we try to, like you were saying before, Kama, is the fact that, you know, we are pushing it more and more. The more scripting we add and the more systems we add to the system, the more it's going to get a little clunky. So we try to really limit that down. So, yeah, we're definitely doing really well as far as what we've been able to do. But as far as where we're going to go in the future, it's, you know, we got to be careful what we do. What about from there?
Yeah. I was just going to say, yeah, it's hard to kind of find a happy place between continuing to want to add new content, but also keep it as stable as possible for the player's experience.
But as far as the DM's perspective, what would you say the climate is with the players nowadays, Gruer and Jastin?
I mean, well, we have kind of still getting new players every day, all the time, new people coming in. There's a lot of old players that have been around for ever and, you know the whole server in and out, and you know, a lot of helpful people that will kind of help out the new players, show them where to go, give them hints when they need help. You know, myself included, you know, there's a lot of people that will get on to create a new character and help new guys through the early chapters and without an overpowered god walking them around. You know, plus there's always a lot of other people on anyway, so everybody seems pretty friendly and kind of have a good time.
Yeah, it does seem to be a pretty good environment overall as far as the players are concerned. It's very rare that you ever see anyone on, you know, causing trouble. I mean, there's always the occasional, you know, bad apple, but as far as our whole player base is concerned, I would say that that's, you know, few and far between, very rare occurrence. And, yeah, there's always new people coming on, and we're just here to try to keep them around.
Yeah, and with, you know, not just us two, but all the other newer DMs that are hanging around now, trying to stir stuff up and, you know, get little side events going and stuff to keep it interesting for the players. So we try to do that as much as we can.
Yeah, I've noticed too, as far as like the NWN2 player base as a whole, I would say that it's remaining rather strong. I mean, it's kind of degraded a little bit with some of the new games that's come out. But, you know, I think as a whole, Neverwhere Nights 2 is still doing rather well. And without having been updated, no new packs coming out, I think what's happening is I have seen some other key servers fold up shop in the past, I don't know, maybe like 4 or 5 months. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that will bring influx of players, not just to Realms of Terrain, but other servers as well. You know, I think that's something we need to capitalize on, all of us Persistent Worlds that are still up and running, and to really capture and to maintain the brand, the Neverwhere Nights 2 brand, and to keep players coming in, because if we're all in it together, as I said before, I know there seems, a lot of times there's like competitive the climate of competition between Persistent Worlds for, you know, vying for players. But at the end of the day, we're all in it together because it's up to us to provide the players with a continual and ever-flowing user experience that's going to keep them coming back, and a fresh experience that's going to keep coming back and playing Neverwinter Nights 2, because the game creators, Obsidian, have not, you know, they're not obviously going to be creating any more packs, at least in the foreseeable future, for Neverwinter Nights 2, and or updates or upgrades. So, you know, eventually you're going to have a situation comes in, unless the community continues, as it has for Neverwinter Nights 1, doing a lot of great, awesome work, there's not going to be a player base for Neverwinter Nights 2. Everybody's just going to say, yeah, nobody's working on nothing, I don't see anything new, guess what, I'll go play something else.
Yeah, I'd like to expand on that real quick.
Sure.
You know, that's one of the things that's always, for months now, been one of my concerns. I've been paying attention to this Neverwinter 2 versus the Neverwinter 1, and you know, it still amazes me that Neverwinter 1 is going so strong, but it's because of the community behind it. You know, the dedicated people that are still producing content. You know, whether they have opposing worlds or modules out there, they still more or less band together and work as a unit to keep the game going. All right, and that's what I see the Neverwinter 2 community still needing, is those of us that are involved in it to band together and, you know, to keep the brand alive.
Absolutely. Yeah, you have to band together, and we have to work together to do this. You know, speaking about working together, I mean, even there's other, we have contributors that aren't a part of the ROT staff, but for instance, we have Cadron for the, who's developed the PRC. You know, no matter how you, what you feel about the content, whether you think that, you know, the server should or should not have it or something, you know, whatever, the point is it's a very, very great thing to have available to the NWN2 community to be able to add these wonderful packs and all this work to our server. And for players to enjoy. I mean, one of the best things I'd say a lot of it, Neverwinter Nights players enjoy is the richness of the game itself and all the options you have. There's so many options in Neverwinter Nights 1 and 2. Without that, and without contributors such as Cadron and other people who develop the models and the other great content on the IGN Vault, you know, I really feel that the NWN2 community would be in a bad shape right now. But because of their the contributions to the NWN2 community, it really helps out. I know for a fact that without some of the models and things that were developed for Neverwinter Nights 2 community, you know, it would really take away from the experience and the immersion factor of some of the stuff that we've even created for our server. So, you know, please, if you're out there listening and you're an NWN2 designer, it does models, please keep it up, you know, for armor, especially for mobs. If you enjoy doing that type of work, there's still plenty of room to go. I mean, there's a lot of models and mobs that aren't in existence yet, such as a Dracolich, for instance, that would be fantastic if it was created, and a lot of other stuff. I mean, it's definitely doable. I mean, there's been Bouncy Rock has done a lot of wonderful models, such as like the Beholder and the Driders. I mean, they're just fantastic.
Yeah, Bouncy Rock's done some amazing stuff for mobs.
Yeah,
I love the Driders, dude. I love the Driders. I've incorporated them into some DM run events many, 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 many times.
And with that, we're going to sign off here from ROT, but I would suggest listening out there in the audience, if you are a Neverwinter Nights 2 player or designer or developer, and you have any questions about just about anything, you know, feel free to post on the Neverwinter Nights podcast forum under questions, and take a look at the website's www.nwnpodcast.com/forum, and post a question about developing, you know, developing anything in the system. You also can post any questions to us directly on our website, www.realmsoftrinity.com/forum. Send us a private message or, you know, post. We have a specific forum where we give advice and tips, not just about playing our game, but also if there's any questions about designing and developing areas and zones, or even about Neverwinter Nights 2 development as a whole. Please join. You know, please check us out. Our website's pretty easy to get around. So is the NWN Podcast website. Very professionally done. So check us out, and, you know, let's help move the NWN2 community forward and keep it alive and add more and more to it, because I really feel that the Neverwinter Nights 2 brand is a great brand, or I wouldn't have spent the billion hours I stuck into it, as well as my staff. They wouldn't have spent the billion hours if they didn't believe in the actual game and the engine and the enhancements that it did bring to Neverwinter Nights over Neverwinter Nights 1.
As well as any of these other persistent world groups out there that need, want to get a little bit of airtime, tell them to get a hold of us. We'll bring you on, and you can tell the community what you got going on as well.
Yes, that'd be awesome. If you have a Neverwinter Nights 2 persistent world, contact me at www.realmsoftrinity.com/forum. And my handle is BSB5652. Send me a private message or comma, private message, and tell us what you'd like to have incorporated a show, and we'll get back with you.
We have with us today Mark, a.k.a. Below the Belt from Aranthior, which I probably mispronounced that, as we always do. This is the newest persistent world for Neverwinter Nights 1. That's right, you heard it, Neverwinter Nights 1. It's currently in open beta and seeking builders and scripters, DMs, and, of course, players. Hey, let's find out more by talking to Mark. Hello, Mark. Thanks for being on the show.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
So, to start out, we always have everybody that we interview tell us a little bit about themselves. So, that's your cue.
Sure. First of all, before I get started, let me just say that this is really an honor and a privilege to be talking to you guys. I've listened to all the podcasts you guys have put out, the whole team, and I think you guys are the podcast in general, a great shining example of what community has become, and including the scripters and the builders, the passionate players, all representing for the Neverwinter Nights community. So I think that this podcast represents that in a great way. So thank you for having me, and thanks for all that you guys have done and the effort that you put into to putting this together. So also, just wanted to say a belated congrats to you on the AME Golden Dragon, by the way. Very well deserved. So
thanks a lot. Yeah, and you're making me blush now.
Having said that,
we're glad to have you on our first show that we've come back with. So
yeah, that's great. That's awesome. As far as my background personally, I've been playing D&D, or I did play as a kid, and was often the DM when I got my friends together, because generally they were too lazy to do it, and it was something that I was always drawn to.
Frankly, it's a lot of work.
It was. It definitely was. I think as a creative outlet, it allowed me to immerse myself in that kind of experience in building environments and getting people engaged in kind of a common shared story. And I think that's where it all started, and it's carried through from everything that I've been doing in this kind of genre since then, and it's ultimately found a home in Neverwinter Nights 1. As I grew up, I didn't play Dungeons & Dragons very much anymore, but I was always kind of interested in the genre, and then when the game came out, I played the original campaign a number of times, and slowly, kind of probably a little bit behind the curve, discovered the whole world of persistent worlds and community content that was out there, and ultimately found a home for a number of years on one of the larger role-playing persistent worlds that was out there. And on that world, I found myself becoming sort of an unofficial dungeon master, and that I didn't have any roles, any responsibility to the DM, but I'd go on as a player and create like an evil character or a monster type character, and I would try to have people come and kill the monster, and I'd amass some loot and try and give that loot away to people who were able to take it down. So even as a player, I was trying to engage people in these ways of helping to tell that story. So eventually I got the bug to try my hand at it and build something from scratch. So I poured that passion for storytelling into the tool set, and knowing nothing about scripting and how to put all the pieces of the world together, I started from scratch. And after 3 years, I'm proud to say that Arendior has taken taken its steps into being a world that other people can join. So I'm very happy about that.
Well, I definitely think there's a key word in there that you mentioned is passion. And I would, you know, I'm not saying anything new. Everybody that we've ever brought on the show or has been on the show or is in part of the Neverwinter Nights community definitely has a passion for storytelling and entertaining. So I appreciate that you have that passion and the ability to stick with it for 3 years, because that would probably drive me crazy.
Absolutely. It has its ups and downs for sure.
So go ahead.
So we understand that Arendior is the newest persistent world for NW1 in existence. So why don't you tell us what the new server has in store for players?
Well, it's certainly one of the newest, definitely. And it's, as far as what we can offer the players, it's really an immense list. I thought I would start off by giving a little bit of the world background so that what we have to offer makes a little bit of sense. Essentially, the world lore is that an age ago, from where players enter the game when they come in, there was this great catastrophe called the Great Rift Image, essentially tore the world into two different parts. And the survivors fled to easternmost part of the world. And at the same time, all the fey creatures, namely the elves and the pixies and other kinds of magical creatures, fled the land and went to go live in a protected homeland island. And whereas before, those fey creatures were kind of seen as the shepherds and unofficial masters of the realm, when they left, they pretty much left the rest of the inhabitants of the continent to their own to their own suffering and their own essentially deaths. And unfortunately, there was a lot of death and dying and misfortune that happened in the world after that great catastrophe. Floods, mountains crumbled, seas rose, you can just imagine. And the people that were remained had to reconstruct civilization again, and they had to do it without the help of the fey creatures anymore. And they had to do it without the help of magic, without the things that the natural resources that the elves were could bring to bear because of their natural affinity for the world. And so nowadays, where players play the game today, the elves are seen as villains, they're seen as lower than the low, they're seen as cowards, and just now, civilization is coming back to the world. We've got humans who have just now established a fairly decent-sized city in the world. The other races are established their homelands again. A lot of the people can, in the longer-lived races, remember back to those times, but the humans, to those shorter-lived races, it happened ages ago, generations ago. So it's something that's in kind of the world history, but not necessarily something that's happened yesterday, or in grandfather's time, something like that. So in that backdrop, we offer a number of different ways to help players bring forth their role play and be part of the world. And one of the things that we strive to do is to create a dynamic world that's going to react to the player influences. This is the role play of Arendior is not written hard in stone. It doesn't have a storyline necessarily that pits a good civilization against a bad civilization that can't change over time. It's largely a blank canvas that We're looking for the players to come in and help influence and drive and create civilizations that rise and fall based on the performance of how the players do and how their characters are able to drive that storyline. It's also a very open world design. If your player can get to an area and can survive there, stealth or brute force, we don't restrict where they go to a large extent. If you can get there, then your player can go there. We do design it as a quest-based world. I think one of the things that I love about the D&D days is that you formed a party and you went through a dungeon, you had a good dungeon crawl, and Arentia is built much like many small modules built together. The quests are robust, they're intensive, and they're designed to be harken back to the old D&D module kind of environments.
That sounds cool.
What's an example of one quest?
Spoiler alert!
Exactly. No. one of the first quests that you'll experience going through the server if you're a non-fae creature is that the broken crypts beneath the graveyards of the new city of Bastion, where the humans kind of reassembled their first city, has been taken over by a group called the Corruption. And you have to find out what's going on and put an end to it. Exactly. And one of the good things, I think one of the real unique things about how these modules are set up is that they are dynamic and they're customizable. So, and they're random. So you may play a different character 3 or 4 times, but you probably won't go through the exact same dungeon through the broken crypts each time. They're set up so that the maps are different, the doors are different, everything leads to a different experience. So if you're not going to get tired of going through that one particular dungeon because it represents the fact that it may be a different crypt that you're going through this time than you were, last time.
So curiously, how did you do that?
Well,
Chinese secret.
What?
Ancient Chinese secret.
Exactly. It's actually something I'm quite proud of. The I won't claim to have done the, solved the golden riddle around how to create a random environment, but, what I've done is create a number of different maps. Mm-hmm. And create a dynamic area transition process so that when you go through one map to another, it connects those two maps dynamically at that spot, so that as your party travels through, that transition remains. But if you were to leave the dungeon, then completely recreates those or resets those transitions.
And then chooses a different one the next time you come in, go through
exactly,
that transition?
Exactly. So that if you were to go through all the way to the end, you could backtrack all the way back out, but once you left and your entire party left, then if you were to go back in, you would have a completely different route to go
through. That's cool. So I have a question. You mentioned this earlier when you were answering this question. It said, if you're not playing a fae creature. So what if you are playing a fae creature?
That's a good one too. What we wanted to do was create a very special, personality or persona, or give the people who come into that in those environments a very clear understanding of what it means to play in the world of Arentia. So there are a number of quests that you complete as a fae creature that impart a little bit of knowledge to you as you go through it. So the first one, I don't want to spoil too much about it, but as you go through these series of quests, you gain, hopefully, a very close understanding of how you're different than every other creature out in the world. And I hope that helps the players adopt some role play and how to play that differently than a non-play creature.
Well, you mentioned in your, you know, giving a setup on this that they had kind of left and left the land to itself. Now, is that still the case at the current setting that you have, or have they started coming back together?
They have started coming back
together,
but it is few, far between, and very rare.
Gotcha.
And there's a lot of animosity from everybody else towards them.
So you said you've been in development for a little over 3 years. So has that just been you, or did you have anybody helping you? Do you have
no,
a team?
The team would be me, myself, and I. And I is pretty lazy. He's just been it for the groupies. So me and myself have pretty much been doing the heavy lifting. I have reached out to the community, which I mentioned earlier. Just a fantastic group of people when I've run into the core challenges. But I think that the server's in a great place right now. It's really well developed, and I'd love some opportunity to work with some people and help bring their creative vision and their creative talents into the world and see if we can take it to the next level.
Speaking of challenges, what are some of the challenges you've ran into over those 3 years, especially for such a mature game?
That's a really good question. And it's one of the things that I gave a lot of consideration to when building a Renthior back when the game was only 6 years old. You know, it was still mature then. And I actually stopped production for a few months as I kind of considered what it was going to take to make the world new, unique, different, something that that people hadn't seen. I wasn't going to feel like me too kind of world, because it's fairly easy to put up a persistent world. But I think the true value of the world is creating a unique personality and something that's differentiated that people can look at an instant and feel like, hey, this is something that I'm intrigued by and I haven't really seen, before. And so the one thing that I turned on was the idea of the elves versus everybody else. I think that
yes,
it's not something that you typically see. Elves are typically in most worlds just a common race, and monsters are kind of vilified. And Renthior is probably elves are the lowest of the low, and I think that offers people a great new way to play. Play elves.
I don't like that.
Filthy human.
Exactly.
We've done some role playing.
Oh yeah?
Where I'm the filthy human and he's the...
Yeah, he was a human and I was an elf and we were in the same...
You were a filthy elf.
Yeah, well, no, I was the elf. I was more intelligent, more... been around longer, seen things happen. Your lifespan's so short, you know. You just don't understand what's going on in the world. As you can see, the role playing was quite fun.
Exactly. And then another thing that is different about the world is that who you are, not just in your race, but your alignment and the gods that you serve are very important. Talked about kind of the random dungeons that you go through in this quest. Well, as your party goes through and conquers a dungeon, your party as it relates to your race makeup, your alignment makeup, and the gods you serve, claim that dungeon. And let's say that you're a party of all lawful good adventurers. You go through, claim the dungeon for lawful good. Well, the party that follows you, the boss that they have to fight, is predicated based on who owns that dungeon. So,
oh, that's cool.
You're going to fight, if the party behind you is lawful good, well, they're going to fight the champion of lawful good. So it's kind of defend the right to that dungeon. But if they're evil, they're going to fight a different boss monster in order to claim it for their own and determine based on how many dungeons your alignment has claimed, how many dungeons your race has claimed, and how many dungeons your deity has claimed, you're going to be attributed bonuses or penalties. So if you're evil in a land of Orinthior that has been dominated by lawful good players because they claim so many dungeons, you're going to be affected by that because you're going to be oppressed by all the goodness that's surrounding
you. And I'm just sitting here thinking of how all of the stuff, you know, the picking the new dungeon whenever you go out and you come back. And then this, really attributes to replayability.
Absolutely.
You put a lot of thought into that. I could say, man, you could spend lots of time here playing different things and still it be so unique every time you come in.
That's the hope.
Sounds like a candidate for the replayable module category.
Yeah, it sounds exciting.
So I'm a player and I'm seeking adventure.
You are?
Yes.
Oh.
Always.
I hear there's a new PW you need to go try.
And hot chicks too. Where in Orinthiothor would you send me?
Well,
what are some of the areas that you're especially proud of?
There's a lot that you can do. Obviously as a new player, you'll be spending a lot of time around the main human city. And I think that's where you're going to find a lot of your adventuring parties and that's where you're going to find a lot of the role play. And that's done by design so that it gives players kind of a central area to congregate and form parties and go out. So that will definitely become your home base. But as soon as you're able to get out beyond the swamps that surround the city of Bastion, you're going to find old elven forests that have ruined cities in them that you can explore. You're going to find the Great Rift. You're going to be able to go right up to that and look over the tear between the two sides of the continents. You're going to be able to ultimately travel to different planes. One of the most interesting places that I've been designing lately is Hades, and I'm really happy about how my river Styx has turned out.
You're going to be nice. Able
to interact with Charon and cross the river Styx on his ferry boat and interact with all the creatures of the underworld. So that's a very exciting thing. But there's planar travel that will be available to you, as well as underwater adventures. You haven't really lived until you've stared into the eyes of a megalodon. You know, I think that's going to be something that the players are really going to enjoy.
So doing some research on the server, we uncovered that you've got a couple of really interesting systems in place. And I was going to ask you about both of them, but wanted to touch them one at a time. So one of them is around accolades and how you might earn those special awards. And can you tell us a little bit about how you implemented that system and how that the players will benefit from that system being in the world?
Sure, that's great. That's actually something that I'm really happy about too. You know, you guys have played on these persistent worlds, and I have too. And especially in roleplay worlds, grinding and leveling is just part of the process. It's something that you've got to do.
Right.
Not necessarily, it can be fun, especially if you got a great party and you guys are role playing as you go through it. But one of the things that I wanted to introduce was the idea of giving some purpose to the hunting that you necessarily have to do, when you're out, doing the grinding. And that's where the idea of these accolades came in. It's almost a badge of honor that your character can earn for actually striking the killing blow on a very rare, unique monster.
Oh, okay.
So, for example, in the crypts, one of your first adventures, one of the rare monsters that might spawn, all of these accolade creatures are relatively rare creatures, so it's very unusual for you to see them very often. But if you kill the rust monster, and this rust monster is, you know, a dangerous creature, you can eat your sword, you can eat your armor, you can do all these bad things to you. So, finding him and actually killing one is quite a feat for you at a lower level. So, if you actually strike the killing blow, and there might be four of you fighting it, but whoever actually kills it, will be awarded with this badge in your inventory that essentially says you're a gross monster killing machine.
Nice.
And so you can go around and that can help you, you know, in your role play and can help show that because it gives you some status within, that separates you from somebody else within the world that might be the same level, but you've done something noteworthy by killing this monster. And that's the first kind of accolade that you can earn. That's a very static, unique accolade. You can only earn one rust monster accolade. The other one is a more functional accolade, and that one can be earned by killing, say, dragons, for example. Dragons are relatively rare, but you can, as you go through your hunting, as you go through, you might potentially spawn one. And if you were to actually confront it and strike the killing blow, you would earn an accolade that is representative of that particular color. And so, if you were to kill a second, a third, a fourth one, those accolades build on each other, and ultimately you become known as a
Dragon Slayer.
Exactly.
nice.
And there's an order to them. You know, the first order might be the Dragon's Bane, then the Dragon Slayer, then the Dragon Master, then the Dragon Lord. And each one of those different levels confers different powers. It might be able to summon a particular color dragon at reaching one of the higher levels, or summon one as a mount at one of the higher levels.
So these accolades, before Trey drools all over his microphone, these are more than just accolades because they're actually imparting more skills and abilities to your character.
Right.
Did I understand that right?
They don't all do that. Like the
right.
The first example would just be a status badge of honor, but there are some like the dragon ones, and each type of dragon has a different kind of accolade. So you would need to earn a certain number of blue dragon accolades before you became the blue dragon's bane.
Okay.
Title. Yeah. And then if you accumulate the blue, red, white, black, you know, you become the chromatic dragon lord. So it's a whole interworked system, to help players.
I'm sorry, go on.
No, just to help players, because the hope is that you're not out hunting and grinding, you're looking for dragons.
Right.
And so does it get you special equipment too?
No.
That you wouldn't normally get?
No, it doesn't get you special equipment or anything like that. No, it doesn't give you your player an ability per se. But because you've faced dragons and you've killed so many, you command a certain power over them. Like you have earned the right to call on their aid.
Okay, so ask the mount question. You're dying to.
Well, he already said, like, if you become a dragon lord, you can then summon a dragon in riding.
Exactly.
I was expecting to go like, so if it, us dragons, are there other mounts available?
The only other mounts available are the horses, the traditional horses.
Gotcha.
But we do have jousting, so in addition to just running around the server on
nice.
you can do some jousting and I don't have a system in place for that, but the idea is that you'll be able to have a persistent score based on an algorithm of different variables, your strength, your dexterity, the relationship between those two abilities, your writing.
Is there a king and a queen that you joust for?
No, specifically because I didn't want to build the server with that kind of hard-coded bureaucracy in place. I think that, you know, it will be up to the players to determine how City of Bastion is run.
So a player could become the king.
Absolutely.
What you're saying?
Absolutely. And the idea is
it's good to be the king.
That it is.
They're going to be able to make treaties with other races or other towns. They're going to be able to wage war, issue taxes, all the things that, that a normal leader can be, because a lot of people do like the political role play. I want to create an environment that supports that.
But what if it's your destiny?
It could very well be. It could very well be.
Segueing into the other system we were wanting to talk to you about, which is the Destiny system.
That's pretty slick, Jay. I like that.
Yes.
See how I got that in?
Yes.
Yeah, the Destiny system is another unique system that I'm really happy to have. And again, this goes into character development and how if you can enhance your character's playability without necessarily creating new abilities or other kinds of items or armor or anything like that. But the idea of the Destiny, and one of the key things that goes throughout the world of Arentior is the idea of the fates. And from Greek mythology, there were three fates. There was Lachesis, Clotho, and Atropos. And each one of them, the Sisters of Fate, had a special purpose, you know, for every soul that was born. Clotho was the spinner. She spun a person's destiny. Lachesis kind of measured it out and figured out how long you were going to be living. And then Atropos, she had the shears. She cut the thread of your life when it was time for you to die. And so that theme plays repeatedly through Arentior and also into the selection of a particular destiny for you, for your character to follow, if you so desire. You don't need to have one. But there are 22 different destinies at this point that you can choose for your character to loosely follow. And ultimately, I think we're going to have around 50 or so that you can potentially choose. But as you choose one, they're different tropes that help assist in your character progression as you think about how your character develops. But they also, at certain intervals, as you level, as you progress ultimately to, epic level, affect your character in some way. So there are some basic, very fundamental destinies that you can choose. Fortune, you know, increases your chance of finding more valuable things. There's one of leadership, which gives you better skills in terms of talking to people. And then there is power, which is additional benefits to experience. But then there are some more arcane ones as you travel and go through your experience. Like you might have the black magic one. Have the blind seer, or you might have the hero of the sacrifice, or one of these other tropes that as you level, say you get fifth level, something happens to your character, and that's hardwired in the system. You go visit one of the Sisters of Fate, and she imparts to your character some type of benefit or penalty based on what your destiny is intended to be, and that follows you at certain intervals through your character progression up until you achieve your destiny at epic level.
Is there a wealth destiny?
There is. So you can have a better chance of finding more gold or more items. A better chance of finding new items. I'm a huge fan of randomization. And I really feel like that's your earlier point about replayability. I think that adds a lot. So dungeons are random. the traps within the dungeons are random. The encounters are random. Even the loot system, like what it generates, is completely random. I don't have a lot of free set magical items in the system. I create a system to generate that for me.
Nice.
So this got me thinking.
Oh dear, we're in trouble.
Hey. So if you have to move around mostly in parties, if you're partied up with say 5 or 6 players, do they all earn the accolades or the fate or whatever together? Or is that still totally separate?
That's totally separate. Like the accolade is only for the person who strikes the killing blow. And that was intentional. It was designed to create a sense of almost competition and among the players. But it's not so, it shouldn't be so better as to create animosity or anything like that. But certainly, if you earn the accolade, it's something that you should be very proud of. And so I don't want these accolades to become too prevalent in the server. They should be, or they'll lose their work. So they should be doing barbecue.
So I'm thinking most people in the real world are in pursuit of power and wealth. So does the destiny system, can you have more than one destiny at a time?
No, you can only have one. And
okay.
That's a good question. And I think that, the destinies will have to balance themselves out. There definitely is the easy road, which would be power or fortune or something like that, but then there would be the offers and the bonuses and the penalties by some of the more esoteric destinies will have to more than make up for what you might gain or lose out by choosing one of the more fundamental. So it will definitely come down to how you want your character to progress through the world as they develop that role play and as they develop as a character. The idea of the heroic sacrifice and what that may potentially mean for how your vision of your character is designed to play out versus just being more wealthy.
So. Do you pick the destiny at level or at character creation?
At character creation, and Trey would have, but he skipped through the conversation.
No, I read it all. I'm actually a very fast reader.
next.
Yeah. So no,
I wasn't sure which one to choose though.
At character creation, you select one of the 22 destinies. And that's all you do.
Okay, so you don't have the ability to change your destiny throughout gameplay, or do you?
No, you don't.
Okay. So if you achieve, like, your destiny, is it you just keep, like, if you had wealth, I guess if you want wealth, you keep building wealth.
Right. Some of the more fundamental ones.
Exactly. I'm realistic there.
Some of the more fundamental ones. Occur, you know, just like that. You continue to accumulate wealth. Other ones, like the more theme-driven ones, would happen at regular intervals throughout your character.
Yeah, and of course, the die of the hero's death is kind of final.
Yes.
You don't get any more shots after that, you're dead.
No, but you're a hero.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So you can spin up a new character and come back in the world and hear people singing songs about your last character.
So, yeah. Mark, are you planning some regular scheduled events or challenges that you can tell the listeners about?
Oh, we definitely do. We have about 3 different types of things that we're planning on putting together. There's the one-off DM-led events that, you know, are session-specific. You know, it's very quest-oriented, provides some short-term immersive role-play action. Then there is the larger campaign-wide arcs that are more intensive, multi- multi-session narrative tales that bring change to the actual world. And so those will be a little bit more intensive, a little bit longer time frame. And then there are the challenges that we'll be having periodically. One of the things that we've got going on right now is what I'm calling the Trailblazer Challenge. Since we've got a number of quests and we're a relatively new server, there are a lot of quests that haven't been done yet. You know, they're waiting for a party to go through and accomplish them. And so as a party does that, they're the trailblazers. They're the ones who have done that quest before anybody else. And I think that, you know, how many worlds do you have that are out there that can actually, you could actually do that? So your party has the opportunity to earn some fabulous cash and prizes for being the first adventures for accomplishing specific quests.
Hey, it sounds like geocaching.
Exactly. So that's one of the things. And we've got other things like the idea of the challenge is to solicit player support and activity. So we may have a screenshot challenge. There will be an area design challenge, something that enables players to get involved with the development of the server and world.
So how many regular players do you have now?
We've got about a dozen so far. There's usually one or two that try out the server on a daily basis, but it's about a dozen regulars so far. And certainly my goal is to increase that many times over, and that's a big part. And one of the big challenges one of the big challenges in today's environment is securing the player base. So
hopefully after we air this podcast, you'll get a few more.
I'm hoping so. Yeah, I'd love to have your listeners come out and
since we have thousands and thousands and thousands of listeners.
Exactly.
Divided by 1,000.
It's the quality of the listeners.
So, do you think that you mentioned, you know, getting a player base is one of the challenges, and I'm really curious how you feel that the Neverwinter Nights One community is right now, since you did, you know, you spent so long working on this, and it's into, you know, a Neverwinter Nights world, and this game's been out like 9 years now. Mm-hmm. How did that factor in when you were thinking, well, yeah, let's go ahead and keep this Neverwinter Nights 1 and release it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think that you've got the fact that it's an old game, the fact that, you know, new operating systems.
Some might say mature.
Yeah, exactly. Mature game. There you go. And I think that new operating systems, new versions of the game, you've got the online multiplayer game coming out. I think those help keep the franchise fresh. And I think that the experience of Neverwinter Nights 1 in terms of a persistent world environment and what it has to offer will continue to keep people involved. But I do think that, you know, it will be a challenge to hold on to the players. And I think that's why the persistent world do come out in this type of environment, have to be more dynamic, have to be more customer service focused, that they have to respond and respect what players have to say.
Free ale.
Exactly. That's right. That's the next challenge. But as an example of that, I had a player who was considering coming on the server a couple of weeks ago and spent like 3 hours on a chat talking about the server and what it had to offer. So I think that's kind of focus on the player base and supporting them and where they want to go with their role play is one of the keys to success. Certainly not the only one, but one of the keys.
Cool. So we joked, but you know, that kind of sounds like a really cool challenge. You have to be the first one to drink ales from all of the other races and cities, you know, that are in the world.
There you go. I'm going to write that down.
It's kind of like the beer, you know, beers of the world kind of thing.
Exactly. And there are some advantages too, being a mature game.
Oh, yes. It's not going to change as much on you.
Exactly. And it's a known quantity. You know, the community is so, so well developed. If there are any problems at all, any concerns or questions about scripting or area data, the community knows those answers. You can get that very easily.
And that's why I said mature, because you know that, you know, even with the release of Dragon Age and other games that have come just, you know, in the heels of Neverwinter Nights 2, that the challenges with those tool sets have frustrated a lot of people, and it's because it's new, and there's new ways of doing things, and they're trying to make it better, but they're making it harder and more complicated all at the same time. Where Neverwinter Nights 1 is just Neverwinter Nights 1, and it is what it is, and everyone's used to it, everyone's comfortable with it, and with the... It's a great game, and then you layer the community-built stuff on top of it, like the tile set project and the expansion packs and all of the other frameworks that the community's put together, and it rivals Neverwinter Nights 2 in its capabilities.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You've got tools like Neverwinter Nights, you know, the extender, you've got the Lido script, all of those things that go way beyond what Neverwinter Nights, even from BioWare's ever considering how they developed the game. But they had the forethought to include things like the based system. And the ability to do all these other things. So kudos to that.
Well, and if they hadn't, if it wouldn't have, you know, it wouldn't have the life and living as long as it has. Like, it's been like 9 years now, and it's amazing. It's about to be, you know, 10 years old.
Right, exactly. And there's going on GameSpy, there's still hundreds of people that are out there playing the game. So.
Oh, and I just noticed the other day, you can still buy Neverwinter Nights Diamond set at Best Buy, locally.
Definitely. I was actually thinking about going to pick up a couple extra ones just to have them,
Yeah. I was like, wow, it's still on the shelf. How amazing is that?
Okay, so Mark, you're recruiting for builders and scripters and dungeon masters. Why don't you tell everybody how they can get a hold of you if they're interested?
Sure. The world has a website at arentior.com.
A-R-E-N-T-H-Y-O-R, just so that you get the spelling right.
Exactly.
And we'll have that in the show notes.
Yep.
So on the bottom of the homepage, there's an email form field. You just send that. That comes straight to me, and I can pick that up and get right back to people who might be interested, whether you're a player, a builder, a scripter, or have any other interest in knowing a little bit more about the game and the world. I'd love to hear from you. And we're on Twitter, at Arentior, our handle. So you can follow us and keep updated on where things are, maybe a little bit of extra world lore or something. Come through there.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for coming on our show and sharing your new world with us. You're welcome back anytime. And, you know, in the future, if you want to, please, if you want to create any or record any spotlights or anything new that might be happening in your world that you want us to play on the show, please record it and send it to us, okay?
Will do. Thank you guys so very much for having me. It was a true pleasure and honor.
Well, thanks for sharing with us and putting your hard work into 3 years to create a persistent world.
So before we sign off, anything else you would like the listeners to know?
No, just get in game and level up.
You can always reach us via our website at neverwinternightspodcast.com or by email at show@neverwinternightspodcast.com. You can also leave an audio comment or listener hello by calling us on Skype. Just call NWN Podcast, all one word. The opinions and viewpoints expressed on the Neverwinter Nights podcast are not necessarily those of its sponsors or those of Obsidian, BioWare, Atari, their partners, or employees. The Neverwinter Nights podcast is a production of These Old Geeks, who is solely responsible for its content.
For now, I say we crack some of those kegs and drown the flagon in wine.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast.
The Neverwinter Nights podcast is copyright 2010.